This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Uni Ovens. Uni Ovens are out of the box easy. They're some of the best ovens on the planet. They're so portable. We own a bunch. We go to family parties with it. We do events outside. It's really amazing for our neighborhood. Uni Ovens get up to 950 degrees with a variety of models and a variety of price points. They have a model that's fit for everybody in their budget. With plenty of videos on their website and YouTube and their handbook that it comes with, you can get started right away on your journey to becoming an amazing pizza chef. We are also brought to you by Caputo Flour, Il Mulino di Napoli, the mill of Naples. Since 1924, Caputo has milled to offer professionals and baking connoisseurs the very best in quality flour. They offer flours for artisanal bakers, to pasta makers, New York style, Detroit, Roman. We use Caputo for everything. Every competition that I've ever won has been with Caputo Flour. If you guys ever have any questions about Caputo, check out Orlando Foods, Facebook, Instagram, or check them out online. Leave them a message. They'd be happy to help you with whatever you want. We are brought to you by Empire Bakery Equipment. Whether you're just starting out or you've been established for years, Empire can provide you with quality baking equipment and advice. One of the reasons that we love Empire Bake is their service. Have you ever had a pizza oven you can't get fixed? Well, that's not going to happen with Empire. Empire has nationwide 24-hour service with as little as 1 hour to get to you if anything ever goes wrong. Passion, dedication, and experience. That's what dreams are made of. Empire Dream Builders understand that logistics of turning your baking dream into a reality. We are also brought to you by Ciao Tomatoes, Il Pomodoro di Napoli, which means the tomatoes of Napoli. Grown in the Campania region of Italy, known for its volcanic soil. Ciao Tomatoes is, in my opinion, the greatest tomatoes in Italy and perfect for you. The value that they have and the tradition that they represent, I believe, is unmatched. Okay, go. What's going on, guys? We're back on the Pizza Podcast, Vegas Pizza Expo edition. We have my very good friend, Tom Iannucci, hailing from Strong Island. Well, hailing from Hawaii, yeah, by way of Strong Island. You had a pizzeria out there. You were involved with the VPM. That's how we met.
Yeah.
Great fucking pizza guy. What's going on? Thanks for coming on,
hey,
buddy.
My pleasure. Appreciate my honor it. To be here with you.
So you're out here for Expo, obviously. It's great that you came out, that you got out here. Tell me about your pizza journey. Okay. How did that all start?
So I'm a, a New York boy, right? Raised on pizza and, 60s and 70s. I'm a little bit older and like I was telling my son the other day, growing up, there wasn't really bad pizza because if your pizza was bad, you'd be out of business.
Right.
Because there's somebody good that I can go to, so why should I go to you? And it was a different era. So I'm raised up on something, white chipboard box that bends in the middle with the, the red stamp of the chef doing a little thing with the mustache.
Right.
Chubby guy. And it becomes a staple in your life, right? So the guy on the corner, this is where you go and collect Coke bottles back in the day. You bring them in for money. You get 2 cents. You get enough. You can buy a slice for 20 cents.
Or yeah. Whatever.
And I left, I went to Florida. I didn't go to too many places. Went to Florida. Pizza sucked. Okay, it sucks in Florida. And I leave New York in 1984.
Didn't you serve or something? You were in the
Marines.
Well, yeah.
So I'm 4 years out of high school getting into trouble. I'm teaching karate in Long Island.
Okay.
I'm running around with the boys. We're at all the clubs. We're doing stupid stuff. People are going to jail. I got a buddy in Queensboro and one's up in Elmira. And it's like, it's time to get, it's 4 years after high school. It's time to do something. And they blew up the Marine barracks in Beirut.
Oh, yeah.
In 1983. And I was going to go win the war. I went down there and I joined.
You went to Beirut?
I wound up in Beirut 3 years later, 4 years later, yeah.
Oh, shit.
So I joined the Marines. I wound up becoming an embassy Marine, which is like their anti-terrorism for American embassies around the world.
And, right.
And I went to Tokyo. It was a big party. Life was good. I meet this beautiful model from Hawaii. We fall in love. And I'm like, all right, my life's finally getting together here. And About 4 or 5 months later, I get orders to Beirut. So that was 1987. That was a nasty, nasty civil war. So
yeah, they were. They used to be. I mean, was it like the Paris of the Middle East? They used to call it back in the day.
The French Riviera. They were like the Gamp. That was the. It's a beautiful place,
right?
You know, but when I was there, it was just.
Yeah, destruction, bombs going off
just
everywhere,
blown to shreds, and. Yeah. You know, so along those years outside of New York, I'm going to places and I'm trying to get, you know, what I know, pizza. This is what I live on. This is what, you know, this is my culture. And you go, you're in Memphis and you go to some guys, it says New York pizza. You're like, oh God, they got New York pizza.
Yeah, they don't.
You're naive.
Not to this day. Right. To this day they don't. I've been there.
So you're naive enough to think, oh wow, you know, and just disappointment after disappointment. And I'll tell you, I'm in Beirut one day, and it's a true story. You know, I'm in this Beirut. It's high stress, man, just a high stress place. And I'm in my room, and I'm just fantasizing, you know, the tip of a New York slice going into my mouth. And I can feel, I can taste this thing. And I'm just like, with a passion, just dying for some pizza. And you know, it's, of course, you're not going to get it there. I think the low point in my pizza journey is I went around the world, and I ate pizza everywhere. Was Morocco at a cafe, and I walk in and I asked, they had pizza on the menu. I'm what the hell, just I'm dying for pizza.
Right.
And I got a piece of naan bread with ketchup and cheese. And
oh, Jesus Christ.
Was a low point of my pizza, you know, journey. And so when I got out and I went to Hawaii, I told my wife, look, I love you. I love the islands. They're beautiful, but I can't do this naan pizza thing. I gotta make my own. Now, this is 1988, no internet, no YouTube, nothing.
Right.
In Hawaii, no Italian food really to speak of. No, the pizza guy is a guy named Harpo's Pizza, and I think Sparrow's at the mall, you know.
Sparrow's.
Yeah, Sparrow's. And so I said, I'm going to learn to make my own pizza. And in this little kitchen in Honolulu with an electric oven, and I got a Fleischmann's yeast recipe book at my mom's house. And had a pizza dough recipe, and I ripped it out, and I brought it, and I started trial and error. And I would call up New York, and you know, I'd call up the guys from my neighborhood, you know, the pizzeria, and I'd be like, hey, how you doing? You know, my name's Tommy, I'm in Hawaii, I'm just, you know, there's no pizza here, I'm just wondering if you could share a recipe with me. And they'd be like, yeah, F you.
Yeah.
And then when they would laugh, yeah, right, boom. And it was just, it was zero help. Zero help, and I just kept working that dough, and when you don't have the knowledge base, so everything is based off my memory and my sight. If I go back to New York, I would just sit on the counter and watch this guy, watch what they're doing, hoping I can catch a tip or something, and trying in with a pizza pan. And trying to, you know, cook it, you know, it just doesn't work, right? My mom came over one day and she said, you need a stone in your oven. That's what you need, a stone. And once I got the stone, things started getting better. I'm still trying to learn. And my wife's family wanted to go to New York City one day for like, you know, well, we want to go to New York and see a play and do all this stuff.
Yeah,
and
go to the theater district, go to Times Square.
Right. I'm like, okay, you know, we'll go. And they're like, oh, we got a tour of the city set up. I'm like, I don't need a tour of New York City. You know, I know this place like the back of my hand. I knew it in the bad days, you know. And I said, I'm going to do something different. You guys go on your tour, and I'm going to find something to do. And I'm just typed in, it was early internet days. You know, things to do in New York, and Scott Wiener's pizza tours came up, but it was a story about Scott. And in the bottom, it had this little section about Mark Bello.
Good friend of mine. Yeah, I love
Pizza
Mark Bello.
Casa. And I said, oh, I'm going to do that. It's like, it was titled, Learn How to Make New York Pizza in Your Home. And I'm like, this is exactly.
Was this when he had it in his apartment in Chinatown?
Yes.
Yeah. That's so, when I met Mark during those days.
I was one of his first, that first year. So I'm set up for Sunday to go see Mark. And I get a call Saturday. And he's like, hey, you know, Tommy, I know you're from Hawaii. I know your time's short here. But my girlfriend at the time, Jenny, his girlfriend, now his wife, he's like, she's got a surprise party for me, but I booked a class on Sunday. He said, but I'm open the next 3 days. If you pick any day, I'll give you a private lesson. I'll meet you, you know, in Little Italy. And, you know, and I said, shoot, of course.
So, yeah.
So I actually wound up going on a tour. I actually learned a few things about in New York, you know. And then I met him down in Little Italy at a deli where he gets all his cheese. We spent about 8, 9, 10 hours together, and it was just elevated my kung fu, man. You know,
right.
My pizza kung fu just jumped, and we became good buddies ever since. And that's how it began. And then Facebook and these things start. So I'm making pizza once a week, twice a week.
Just out of your house.
Just out of my house.
Yeah. And what do you do for work at this time?
I'm a full-time, always have been, 30-something year. I'm a pastor. I pastor a church.
Okay.
I'm a minister, pastor. I'm a non-denominational. I'm a Catholic boy.
Right.
You know. But you're sitting in a place like Beirut, and they're blowing the crap out of things. You know, you seem to bypass the priest, the cardinal, the bishop. You go right to God, right?
It's like, yeah.
Yeah, I can just go direct. I need to go direct because you guys ain't here. And that kind of was the beginning of my journey of just kind of like... reading the Bible, understanding, wow, a lot of this stuff's not in the Bible that these guys have. You know, you put a lot of mustard on a hot dog, and it's like, it's pretty simple. And I just went that way. So that's what I was doing. But my kids were getting older, and their friends were coming over. And now you got Facebook, and you got all these things. And they're posting pictures. And my wife's born and raised on the island of Kauai. That's where we lived. You get big family, and now you got family coming over to taking pictures, to posting pictures. And now it's starting to kind of get, the word is, you know, on the island, small island, 70,000 people.
Right.
My town in Long Island had 88,000. This entire island has 70,000. And at that time, it was more like 50. Word is going out, hey, this New York Italian guy, you know, married to this girl, Filipino girl over here on the west side, he's busting pizza all the time, New York style, and the pictures are going up, and I'm like walking in stores, and people are coming up, hey, man, so, you know, what are you going to invite me to your house? I'm like, I'm just making pizza for my family, you know, and people started really getting the buzz on it and kind of getting kind of upset because I didn't invite, you know, and it's like, I can't afford to invite everybody, and I can't keep just doing it. And then they all started going to college one day and on a pastor's salary. You know, you don't make a lot of money as a pastor, right?
Right.
You're not in it for the money, in it to help people. And that's all I was into is helping people out. And so I decided, you know, what is it that I know best next to what I do here as a pastor? Best next to the Bible, what do I know? I know pizza. This is my passion. This is my personal gig, right? This is, everybody has hobbies. I'm sitting there at night, you know, studying fermentation times and hydration. You know, that's my thing. I'm into it. And with the advent of the internet and YouTube and things like that, this guy named Kenji Lopez and
Siri Seeds.
Adam Kuban. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So those guys are posting stuff up, and I'm like, wow. Neat articles, neat things they're putting up there. There was a guy named Jeff Varazano or something. Mm-hmm. And he had a whole thing where you could begin to read and start, you know, experimenting and getting a better idea. I had Mark as a base. I could call him up. I'm seeing things. I'm tweaking things. I went to Home Depot one day, and they had a bunch of unglazed terrazzo tiles, you know, those pink ones.
Oh yeah.
Right. And I realized these things are baked in a kiln, so they're high temperature. So I got about four of them. I cut them up, and I lined the oven rack, and I made a giant stone in the oven. My wife would go nuts because I'd leave it in there, and she'd go to bake a chicken or something, and then right as it heated up, she'd open up, she'd see the stones. What do you get these stones out of here, man? And so I can make...
You know what's funny about that?
Yeah.
Is now they're actually... I just saw this popped up like 4 months ago, where now they're actually marketing the baking steels,
right,
that you put two of them in, not for pizza, but for cooking chicken,
right,
everything, because it gives you so much more thermal mass and it makes the heat more even.
Right.
So, yeah.
So I was just doing what I, you know, did. Nobody, outside of Mark at that time. And then I started going to Pizza Expo. So at my 50th birthday, you know, I made up a fictitious pizzeria name and I submitted to Pizza Today magazine. I'm like, yeah, Tommy's New York Pizza. I started getting the magazine, you know, and I'm getting real anal. I wrote a story for PMQ magazine, Pizza Magazine Quarterly, about a pizza guy in Kauai, and I'm getting a little bit more in depth and stuff. I'm ready. I got three kids in college. Can't afford it. So I'm going to open a pizzeria now. And I started going to the Pizza Expo about for my 50th birthday. My wife's like, okay, this is the big one. What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? And I'm like, I want to go to Vegas to the Pizza Expo. She's like, are you serious? This is what you want to do on your 50th birthday. Yeah. I'm like, absolutely. And she's like, okay, here's the money, go. And I get there. The next day she calls me up and she says, so what's it like? And I'm like, it's like I found my lost tribe and they're all speaking my language, man. This is great. And that really, Expo really kicked me up. That's where I got to meet people like you and all these other guys. And I got to start to following you guys and watching, you know, what you guys are doing. And it started really just changing me. And about 3 years in, I decided to open a pizzeria. I had been back and forth to Italy. My family's from Naples. And I have a friend over in Benevento, which is the neighboring, you know, province. And I said, if I had to study Neapolitan pizza, this is 2014. I said, who would be the guy? I want the legit guy. And he's like, oh, Tommaso, Enzo Coccia. He's the man. In those days,
yeah,
he was the man.
Yeah.
This was before a lot of other guys went skyrocketed.
Right.
So I set it up and I went in January in Naples for a month, about 40 days or so. And he did a lot of yelling and screaming, you know, just hammering. What is this in your country? You call this a circle? It's no circle, it's a sheet that you throw it away. I don't eat your pizza. Nobody eats your pizza. And I just do it again. And man, repetition. So Enzo would be screaming in Italian. His chief instructor, Davide, would be screaming in half Italian, half English. And
what, Davide Zivitello?
No, Bruno.
Oh, Bruno, okay.
Excellent,
okay.
Excellent pizzaiolo, excellent guy. And, dude, we weren't even allowed in the kitchen the first week.
Right.
What do you do? What do you do? The electric go off. What you do? You shut the pizzeria, you lose the money. No, you make a dough by hand. And it's like in a wooden box, owned by hand for like a week, you know. You know, they cut it open. It's in no bubbles. Do it again. Just sweating, man. And they just, you know, it was like you paid to get just beat, man. They just,
right.
You know, just like there's no love. And I thought, well, you know, I'm Italian. They're Italian. My family's from Naples. They're from Naples. I love pizza. They love pizza. It's going to be great. It's going to be like a family, man. And they're like, they don't give a crap who you are, where you're from, what you know, what you think. You know, you suck. American pizza sucks. Shut up. Here's the rag. Wipe the table. Get ready. I'm like, ooh. So I did that, and it was good. It was grueling in the sense where they just repetition. And every night, I would train all day. Second week after training, you worked at their other restaurant at night. And you prepped. You did all the things that you have to do for a restaurant, which is a very good school. And then after that, for those 40 days or so, I would go to a different pizzeria in Naples every night. And I would just sit there and watch and try to talk. And I hit all the famous guys, and I hit the the guys in the neighborhood guys. And I just watched, man. I just sat there and just absorbed, and I took notes and just tried to get as much in. And then we opened the pizzerias, and we had to introduce them to New York style and Neapolitan because nobody was doing it.
Right.
And it took off.
So you were doing both?
Doing both.
New York style and Neapolitan. What were you cooking the New York on?
Cooking in New York, I started on a Baker's Pride gas deck. A guy in Jersey moved to Maui. And I don't know if you know that Jersey pie. It's kind of obscure. It's where they put the sauce on the top at the end. So they.
Oh, yeah. Southern Jersey. Philly, they do the tomato pie.
Right.
Yeah, they call it.
So he decides to do it in Maui, and it's like he lasted like 3 months. Mm. And he just bought a brand new Baker's Pride for like $14,000. I got it for six. 4 months broken in. So got that. Working on that, I had a Stefano Ferrara oven.
Yeah.
I did that because Enzo had that, you know, and
right.
That's where I trained.
Well, that
on.
Was like back then, that was like the Ferrari. That was like what everybody was going after.
It was, sure. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Now you got some like different options out there. I hear a lot of guys are really into Acuto now. Anthony Mongeri and all these other
Acuto
guys.
Acuto is good. And that Fire From Within, those trailers, they're putting Acuto on their trailers now.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But Mara Forni is coming up. And you have
Forza 40. They're great too. They're good ovens.
So many options today.
Yeah.
Back then it was like, you know, this and...
When you were, it was probably the year that you visited Mark in New York. Back then, there was, you had to call Italy, and it was just, it was a monster thing. But what most people were doing, there were guys going around New York just building the ovens.
Right.
And it would be like, you know, it was all fucking bullshit. We found out later, but it'd be like, oh, I'm a fifth generation oven builder from Naples. You know, we went to Mount Vesuvius. And with a hammer and chisel and took the rocks and then we put them on our back, swam across the Atlantic, and you know, now we're here. We rode a donkey from
Well, you remember Anthony's story. He had an oven built and he used it for 2 weeks and he ripped it out.
Yeah.
Had another one. Yeah, he's a little bit more anal than I am.
I love Anthony. Yeah. Anthony's we've talked about Anthony a few times. I gotta get him on the podcast at some point, but he's just like, I'll talk to him 1 week. I'll be like, yo, how's it going? And he's like, it's going all right. You know, I'm like, what's going on in your life? And it's just like, you know, I was using that diving arm mixer I bought. I hate it now. I can't get a spiral. And then like a month later, he'll be like, I'm back to fucking doing it by hand. And this is like 25 years after, you know, and he's still every day changing, so seeing something like, you know, whatever it is.
Here's my Anthony story. So I'm in Hawaii. He's in San Fran at the time.
Yeah, well, once he moved out there, yeah.
Right, so I'm like, this guy's the guy, man. He's, you know, I'm going to call him up, you know. So I call up the Una Pizza, and it's like, hello, this is Una Pizza Napolitan. You know, we're open. Do not leave a message. We will not return your call. Click. And I'm like, holy crap. So I tried to never answer. Couldn't get any information, website, nothing on this guy. So I wrote him a letter. I wrote this guy a letter.
That's actually a fucking ingenious move.
Dude, I had no choice. I
feel like Anthony would absolutely 100% respond to somebody.
He did. He did. So I wrote him a letter. I said, look, dude, I'm not trying to bother you, you know. I'm starting out, you know. I'm gonna go to Italy, or I was just whatever it was, and I'm just wondering, you know. I had whatever. I can't even remember what I wrote him, but I said, here's my email address. And then about, you know, a week later, I got an email from him. We dialogued back and forth a little bit, and then it was good. I ran into him once. What's it, Orchard Street? You know.
Over in the Lower, when he moved
and,
over.
And,
there.
I was walking to his place. He was coming up. We walked together, and I was just asking him about dough and you know, his preparation. He's like, every day's different for me.
Yeah.
Every day's a new day. Every day it's just a whole thing, and it's like, wow, that's.
Yeah, he does it himself. I was talking to him a lot right before he was, you know, making the move
right
from San Francisco, and he was just like, you know, I can't wait to get back to New York City. I don't like it here anymore. It's fucking terrible. I'm going to be there soon. I found a space. And then I think, like, I spoke to him probably, like 6 months later. And he's just like, yo, I'm fucking miserable. I hate it here. And then he opened up. I think he's happy now. He opened up in Atlanta. Yeah, he opened up. Well, that goes all the way back to
his
beginning.
Home, right.
Yeah,
right.
So he originally, it wasn't even a pizzeria. He had opened an artisanal bakery.
Oh, wow.
And he was just doing, you know, kind of what Tartine, like version of what Tartine does. And it was, I think he was in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. And it was a fucking disaster, bro, because this is like, I think it was like 1994, and these, like, you know, a wife would go in, she'd buy some bread, a couple hours later her husband would come back with the bread and be like, are you fucking crazy? You sold me old bread, blah, 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 blah. Like, this bread's not squishy. Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. I'm fucking Italian. Like, I know what's going on. And they'd fucking throw the bread at him. And, you know, then he opened up the Neapolitan pizza. And it was kind of the same thing where, like, people would come in right. and they'd be like, yo, this pizza's raw, it's floppy, it's fucking watery underneath. And he's, you know, he's pulling out his hair.
Not the case today.
He ends up closing that. Then he opens the East Village, and that's when it really took off for him. And, you know, there was, at that time, there was a lot of people from Italy moving to the New York and hanging out in the West Village and hanging out over there. And it was like this whole little, you know, wood-fired revolution.
Right.
I was working at like Numero Vendotto and then Cacio e Vino in the East Village. And I'll never forget like this, you know, the pizza guy and Giusto, the owner, who are from Sicily. And, you know, we got this wood fired Sicilian restaurant with wood fired pizza. And they come out and they go, you know, you got Cacio e Vino, you got this place, Otto, and all these other places. And all the Neapolitans want to go to this kid from New Jersey with tattoos playing hip hop music half the time. Right. And that's like the best pizza. And he's got like tattoos like you. What the hell's going on? And, you know, it was like,
he became the man.
Oh, yeah. He 100%. I mean, he was going to Naples since
all
he was a kid. And, you know what
every
I'm saying?
Summer. Like,
yeah, he would go there for the summers every year.
That's a lot of education, especially when you're young, man. You're a sponge.
Well, nobody knew back then. And, you know, when the first kind of like everybody was opening up these wood-fired spots in New York, none of them were like VPN, none of them were like Giulio or Roberto Caperuccio. This is before that. Right. That was like round two. And, you know, these guys they'd get like Enzo or one of these guys to build them an oven, one of these local oven hustlers. And, bro, they were charging money, bro. They were charging 50 to 70 grand.
Oh.
You know, like I said, they, you know, chiseled the rocks from Mount Vesuvius and all that. That's why you're paying for it. But they, you know, they would all start out using Caputo. But, you know, you got guys like me and other guys, and there was no real, like training. And it's like, okay, I've been making pizza my whole life in Brooklyn.
Right.
You know, they got a spiral mixer. I'm like, nah, this doesn't work. And, you know, then I would try the Caputo flour and I'd be like, no, this doesn't work. And it was like the days of like, you know, fill the bucket up to here, fill the Coke thing with sugar. It's like, you're not weighing anything. There's no baker's percentages. Right. And everybody ended up like just switching to like using all Trump's flour and just yeast and, you know, rolling dough balls. And that's, you know, what it became.
You know, it's an interesting journey, the pizza industry. And part of Enzo's train is we had to go to the Caputo factory and sit with Mauro.
Right.
Spent the day there. They got a laboratory. They blow up dough.
Yeah.
The farinogram.
Yeah.
The tensile strength. And, man, I didn't realize how scientific in a sense. But the interesting thing about Enzo, guys, is I got there with the American mindset. We weigh our flour and we, you know, we put, you know, water, flour, we mix it a little bit, we add the yeast, we wait for a while, then we add the salt so it doesn't, you know. I get to Naples and they fill their bowl with water and they measure everything by liters, by water. Hmm. And I'm like, whoa, in America, forget saying in America because automatically you're insulting them in some way. Yeah, we're not American. This is the way we do it, you know.
Well, I mean, it's better.
No, it is better. Yeah. And they just get scolded. No matter what it is, you know, you scolded for everything because, you know. So they put the water in. They dissolve the salt in the water.
Uh-huh.
Then they take the cake yeast and they dissolve it in the salt water. And I'm like, whoa. I'm like, that's, I'm like, you're not supposed to do that, right? Isn't that going to kill the yeast? We make pizza 100 years. We don't kill the yeast. Now what? You think you know?
I was
shocked.
I mean, it does slow it down considerably.
This is how they do it.
Yeah, no, I know.
And this is what they tell. You know,
it doesn't kill it, but
Who am I to question? I did. I got killed for that. They're making 750 pizzas a Friday night and a Saturday night. You know, 750 Friday, 750, and they're selling them like crazy. And they, you know, they got a great product. And it just, their thought was that water never changes. Flour changes, humidity will change, you know. So you put the water in, that's your base, that's your baker's percentage, is 100% water.
Right.
So if it's 1 liter, It's one scoop and a half. If it's 4 liters, it's four scoops and a half.
Oh, they weren't weighing out the flour.
Oh, no, dude. Everything by sight, touch, everything. Oh, yeah.
Fuck man. That.
Yeah, dude. And you sit there and you watch that thing and you and they, that's part of your test is, you know, you got to stop. Your last one has to be at 13 minutes. They believe it's 2 minutes to incorporate. Anytime you add, it's got to be at least 2 minutes. You stop at 13. That's the last time you can adjust it, but you feel and you smell and you hear. And it's, you know, it's kind of cool in that way because it can change every day. But,
right.
But that was their thing. So, you know, but things have changed. Things, understanding of flour. I spent about a week with, you know, Johnny Chez, his father, Chito.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In the basement. And King Humberto's, and he doesn't, I'm like, Chito, how much, you know, are you adding? About decent much. And he, you know, there's no, he doesn't formula.
Right.
It's by.
Well, Johnny does that.
Johnny does, because he's behind the father going, 17 ounces.
You know? Yeah.
But, and even the way he scales, he just takes the dough, he's got a knife, he puts a hunk. And he doesn't use digital. He won't use digital scale.
He uses, the old school like
that. He's got a rock.
Yep.
And he puts it on, and he puts it on, and throws it, and they... Done. Old school. And I asked him one day, I said, what about yeast, bro? What did you guys do? I mean, he's 70, I don't know, he was 70-something. I said, what did you guys do for yeast? He didn't have, we didn't have commercial yeast. We didn't have commercial... We loved when the American flour came. It was nice. It was packaged. It was white. It was, but we ground our own stuff all the time, and we would. My mother would have a cup on the counter, full of flour and water, and so many days it'd start bubbling, and you know, to take it from there. That's why, you know, years later, I'm studying with. I had VPN guys come to Hawaii to train my guys. So I get the free pass from Enzo, right? Because, you know, Enzo was one of the founders of VPN or whatever.
Yeah.
But so this guy, Mario Villara, who I got.
I know Mario. Yeah. Mario's great.
We're like brothers. This guy's helped me so many times.
Yeah. Mario's one of the fucking greatest guys I've ever met. Have you seen his new place?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's fucking...
He's nuts.
It's fucking crazy. The bar.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's fucking unbelievable.
I was there right as he opened.
I was there... I think it was right before Corona hit. And yeah, he'd only had it for a little while. And I was just like... I was like, you're a fucking genius, bro.
He is, dude. That guy came over with $800 in his pocket.
I know. And look what he's built for himself.
I think he's doing a sushi one now.
Is he? I'm not surprised. That bar though, home run. So Mario, he lives in Venice Beach. He has a restaurant there that's fucking great.
South End.
Yeah, tiny hole in the wall. Like,
his own style pizza.
There's how many seats in there?
No, like 28.
I don't know. Is it that much? I feel like 10.
Yeah.
There was this famous gay bar that had been there forever, and the owner died. The bartenders kind of took it over, but they were all fucked up. They were like doing coke and fucking up the numbers and giving away all the drinks. So he ended up knowing about it, coming in and being like, listen, you owe money all around town. I'm going to take care of that for you, but you got to walk away. And he made this place fucking beautiful.
Oh, that guy's a genius.
Fucking amazing.
He's a genius.
Really.
That guy is one of the smartest dudes I know.
Yeah.
And when it comes to pizza, you know, the guy's, he's phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, he's taught how many countless classes.
Initially, I met him when I did my first pizzeria. They came over to certify my guys. Mm-hmm. And we hung out, and then we just hit it off. We became friends. When I did my second one, he came over on his own.
Right.
He just like, hey, man, I said... I get your ticket, man. He said, no, I got my own ticket. Just give me a place to stay. And that guy just sweat and blood for me. And just, I named two pizzas after him, you know, in both places. One was the Mario Bomba and one was the Mario Acquapazzo, the crazy water. Because he would just, Tommaso, try this. I do this. I'll be like, this is fantastic. And I'm putting it on the menu. And but he was the guy that you know, talking about double zero flour and all that stuff because it's ingrained all of a sudden.
Right.
You need politics. You got to use double zero. You got to use this. You cannot, you know. And he's like, did you ever think about before they had these fine, refined mills? Do you think these guys were making, you think they had double zero flour? No,
they 100% didn't.
Dude, and they were grinding their own, right?
Well, that came out with the, now it's a huge thing. The reason why they came out with TPO 1 flour was because, you know, you got supercomputers in your pockets. So now these younger kids are kind of like, they're getting told like what you were describing with Enzo. Right. No, you use this. I'm selling you a recipe that's from the 1600s, I think Enzo says. Yeah, and other guys say the 1850s. Right. And it's like, wait a minute. But I'm putting commercial yeast. I'm putting double zero flour. Not
50,
until like
60 years ago. Well,
I think double zero is like in Italy, probably like 50s at the earliest it's got to be.
Right.
Because they didn't, I mean, Italy didn't even industrialize really until after the war.
Way after.
Yeah. So, you know, they went through the 60s. They started industrialized farming and everything like that. But
and that was kind of an eye opener. I'm like, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. They didn't have commercial yeast.
Yeah, they didn't have any of this stuff.
Refined flour.
Yeah.
So what is a real Neapolitan pizza then, you know?
I don't think we know.
Right.
We don't really know.
So it's hard to lay a finger on it. And I'm like, wow, you know what? So maybe I can use other flour. Maybe we could try other things, you know. Talking to Sirhan Ayan, you know, about fresh grain.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? He's what's that? There's a guy that just came out with a book from Philly. He's a big time chef, something Leone, I believe.
I don't know.
But yeah, he just came out. But Sirhan's like follows this guy hardcore, and this guy just did this whole book about you know, using natural grains and this and that.
So I just sat in with John Arena and Leo Sparizzi.
Yeah, sure.
Right, and Leo was talking about he uses anywhere from 10 to 30% new grain. And he was explaining how it brings a structure and an enzyme or acetic acid or lactic acid. I can't remember. But it complements the old with the new and stuff. And so, I mean, there's things out there today that were never there. And it's, you know, it's like, yeah, what was it like before? Well, Franco Pepe, right? Mm-hmm. He found a 400-year-old wheat grain seed.
Okay.
And he planted it and started growing this grain that was 400 years old.
Right.
And started using it and milling it to make his own pizza. And that's, he's got a real different pizza if you've seen it, man.
Yeah. So, no, I've had it. It's amazing. Yeah, I think one of the things that Franco did that was very, very different and very, like, you know, guys like Enzo and these other traditionalists were like, what the fuck? Fuck you. Like, this is, you know, yelling at them. But one of the things that he does is, you know, with that, you know, his signature pie, what's it called? The pizza margarita by accident.
Right. Or, he's got all the little,
yeah. So when you just cook the cheese and you're not competing with the, you know, moisture and the water content of the sauce, because it's a lot of water, you're getting a much crispier pizza. You know what I mean?
His is almost like pastries sometimes.
Yeah.
It's a real interesting. We stayed at his, he's got a B&B above his restaurant.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's fucking crazy.
So we stayed there Sunday night. I'm looking out the window in the alley. He's got Sunday night. This is an obscure town. So
it's in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Right, it's outside of Naples in this little village out in the country. It's about 15 miles from my grandmother's village. And I'm like, I'm going to go see this dude. I'm going to go down there. Spent the night over there. I'm looking down the window in the alley, and they get a line of people, like 100 dudes around the corner. And I go down there, you know, and he's talking to the girl. They had 400 reservations for Sunday and 100 people on the waiting list. So he just kind of blew away. And these are Italians.
Yeah.
These are Italians that are Neapolitan. Driving. And now this guy's got something different. And they're just flocking to him. And it's like, wow. I mean, that kind of played with my head. You know what I mean? As far as what am I really doing? Do I have to be VPN? Do I have to hold to a certain?
Absolutely fucking not. You got to make great pizza. That's right. That's it.
And that kind of started freeing me up. Man,
well, do you know about like the whole like Canodo war that like just ended like with the it really I marked the end of the Canodo wars
with the, you know, the neo-Neapolitan kind of thing.
Yeah, so they call it, well, Enzo and other guys started calling it Canoto as like a derogatory term.
Yeah, yeah.
And then these guys were like, yeah, we're fucking Canoto pizza.
That's right.
Fuck you. This is great. We don't give a shit.
So I went from Franco Pepe to go visit Enzo. And this is, you know, I love Enzo. I love those guys.
Yeah, they're
great guys. But he's like, Franco. Ask Franco where he learned his recipe. Who does Franco go to learn? He come to Enzo. He come to Enzo to learn. He wants to know, Enzo, please teach me. And I'm like, okay.
I think these guys are great too, but like everybody's got to fucking get a little bit fucking humbler. You know what I mean? Like, just chill the fuck out, bro.
All of them. Sorbillo, all those guys. And
Sorbillo's humble as fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, every interaction I've ever had with
him. That poor guy, his pizzeria got burned down.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
That's how he became famous, because the story I heard was they burnt it down, but the oven was still there. And then, because they had another two pizzerias.
Yeah.
So they pulled up, they got tables delivered. They made a square in front of the oven and started cooking pizza. The cameras descended, UK, Germany, Paris news. And, you know, almost overnight, he became, like a fucking European national celebrity.
They're like the legends. There's guys in, you know, there's him.
You know he was Cabaneri too, right?
No.
Yeah, so that was the whole...
That makes it even sense.
So this, I see this happen a lot.
I didn't know that.
I see this happen a lot in Brooklyn, actually, where, you know, you'll have a guy who maybe he's got a pizzeria, maybe it's a pharmacy, maybe it's, it could be whatever it is, right? So the kid comes of age, right? But the father's not ready to retire yet.
Right.
So what the father will be like, go, you know, get a city job or be a cop or be a firefighter. And by the time you're done and you get the pension, you take the business over.
Right, right.
Exactly what happened with Gino. So, you know, his father, so he joined Cabaneri, right? Wow. 15 years after he joined, his father's ready to go, takes over the pizzeria. And then the Camorra comes looking for the beans of, like, the tax, the street
tax.
Ain't
gonna happen.
And he's like, are you fucking crazy? It'd be like asking an FBI agent, like, hey, you got to give us money. It's like a fucking FBI. Like,
right. That's crazy. But there's those main players down in Spokanopoly area. You know, the famous 50 Carlo guy. I forget his name.
I know. Salvatore.
Salvatore. Yeah. So you got all these famous dudes, and then you got these young guys trying to make a name for themselves. You know, and it's
well, they changed the game too. It's just different generations of change. But then the ones that like got famous for changing it, you know, you get comfortable. You know what I'm saying? You want to fucking relax. So I think like it's like, oh well, fuck these new guys who are getting attention. This is the real way. And it's like, yeah, but you started using yellow tomatoes and doing all these different things which people weren't doing 15 years ago. Now these guys are elevating it to a different level. I mean, I think that we've learned from like Massimo Bottura and Francesco Martucci and Franco Pepe that, you know, like take the cuisine, be true to it. But, you know, there's an elevation that happens. And if you can elevate the product, do.
So
that's all.
The same
and if people
true.
Love it, they're going to come.
And you can't hit them for that.
Bro, you're never going to convince anybody to have your product by fucking saying everybody else is bullshit.
Yeah,
it just nobody gives a fuck.
Mark Dim. Mark Dim was
Mark Dim a good guy.
Years ago at the Pizza Expo, and he said something, and that really opened my eyes up. He's like, I'm going to tell you guys something. And he's got that thick accent. Especially you New Yorkers. Because you guys, I don't want to put this on my pizza. I don't want to put that on my pizza. Well, don't do it. Because the guy down the block is going to do it. And guess where they're going to go? Down the block. So, and you know, it kind of opened my eyes because that whole journey began. Okay, I'm a New Yorker. This is the 60s and 70s. Here's the type of pizza that I love. I love this. And this, what did we, I don't know, man, it was sausage, pepperoni, mushrooms, onions.
Yeah, that's
the basic set.
That was it.
That was called the works when you got it. I want pie with the works, and they put everything on onions, all that.
Well, we were talking to Joe Riggio, and he was like, you know, we had plain pizza, Sicilian pizza.
Right.
Bro, we had toppings, but, like, not on the window. We didn't have all these different things. It was just like, we have a plain slice, we have maybe a pepperoni and a Sicilian.
And you can order a pie with
you
that
can
stuff
order a pie with
it,
all the stuff.
But the slice was
plain. No, no, no. The slice was what it fucking was.
It was pepperoni and cheese. Pepperoni and cheese.
Bro, he was telling me some crazy story. He was like, Nino, we didn't get a fucking dough fridge till 1988.
Wow.
He was like, wow. And he was talking about they switched, so they had the wood tray. Everybody had the fucking wood trays, and he fucking hated them because he thought it was gross because they would get like moldy and this and that. I don't agree with that, but like, you know, I get where he's coming from. Yeah, you don't know. But then he said, and this was really, and when he said it, I kind of remembered a couple places from way back in the day when I was like 16 years old working at that had this, where they had these fridges with these kind of lines, and you would slide these metal dough boxes in,
wow.
And they were metal, and they would just slide it to the thing, and they had
metal
tops.
Oh, it came out. Oh, yeah.
With the thing on it, and that's what. Yeah, it was fucking crazy. But this is in New York in the fucking 80s.
King Umberto still has wooden.
Oh, they
dough boxes.
They use it for like half of their stuff. Yeah, something like that.
They got tons of them.
Tons of them.
Tons.
He makes more of them. He's got.
He does.
Guy
He's got a guys who make them. Yeah.
And then they cure them up. No, it's great.
You know, who's to say? Then they came out with those aluminum round ones for a while. They would stack those round aluminum.
Well, those came out with Frank Mastro, who's like the... So Frank Mastro is the guy who invented... He invented those things. He invented the dough fridge. He invented the pizza oven. He invented the pizza box. He invented... He put like probably... We estimate somewhere between like the first 400 and 1,200. And it's probably closer to 1,200. Financed,
really?
Supplied... Trained, opened.
Smart guy.
The first, yeah. Smart and then he died, 44 years old. His son Vinny took it over. His son Vinny died at 38.
Wow.
And then the story, like, we don't really know, but this kind of story is that, like, you know, some bad elements kind of broke in because he was where Bowery was. You know, Bowery, B-A-R-I, the equipment store that makes ovens.
I don't
Bowery know. Ovens in New York? No?
I don't know. No.
So... He that was his, that was Mastro's. And they built all the ovens, they built all the fridges in there. And then the story is that some like bad elements after Vinny died came in, burnt all the paperwork, burnt all the agreements and like kind of like took things over. And now they won't even, if you talk to Baker Pride or Marcel and mention his name, like they'll hang up the fucking phone on you.
Wow.
They don't want anything to do with it.
Wow.
I talked to his grandson. Who's still around. He's like I believe a software engineer up in the Boston area. And he was like, listen, I was 5 years old. I don't know what happened, but I had an uncle, my mother. This was a big business.
Who told me.
Why would they walk away?
Right.
If it wasn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the thing about New York. Remember they shot a guy a few years back for his sauce recipe or something. Yeah.
I know. I actually know the story of this. So, yeah, the owner of L&B got found dead, $10,000 in his pocket in behind his house at Bensonhurst. They didn't even take the money. So this is a story that I heard. And I don't know if it's true or not. I just heard this on the street somewhere. So this guy in Staten Island, right, opened a pizzeria. He, you know, apparently had one of the guys who worked at L&B Spumoni Gardens.
Right.
Knew the sauce recipe.
Right.
And this guy that opened the pizzeria in Staten Island, like, it was this little fucking hole in the wall.
Right.
And the story I heard, like, literally, like, it was either a paper plate or, like, just a piece of computer paper with a Sharpie. Wrote. So this isn't some like
sophisticated
operation in any way. Just L&B Spumoni sauce. We got the recipe. So, you know, the L&B guy, you know, heard about this and made a and knew a couple guys in the mob and created a street beef. Right.
Right.
It turns out the guy in Staten Island knew some guys too.
Well, Staten Island.
And then now you took this to the street. So now. You get that element involved. Now it's, you know, it's a life or death thing. And when the sit down happened, guess who won?
Yeah.
The guy from Staten Island.
That's right.
He got, so that was it. You know what I'm saying? Somebody's got to go. Once you start that, somebody's going.
Yeah. So interesting. Interesting times, interesting changes. But, you know, you listen to a guy like John Arena, you know, who's been doing this for what, 50 some odd years?
Oh, yeah.
And his parents did it in the late 50s, early 60s. And he just said today, you know, if you're making the same dough you made 20 years ago, is this a problem? You know?
Yeah.
you change, things change, you grow, you learn, and you know, so there's an evolution. What you were initially talking about, and it from this Italian over to this New York style,
right?
And you see this. I think it's a good thing where we're at. You know,
this is the greatest time.
Right, it's like a renaissance.
Yeah, it's literally a renaissance. We understand more than we ever have. I mean, think about when I was a fucking kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, limited.
Like, I'm arguing with some guys on the street about whether the fucking sky's fucking blue or green.
Right.
And the guy who's going to win the argument is going to be the kid who's the loudest or toughest or most charismatic.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter if it's completely wrong. And then how do you figure out the answer to the question? You got to go to your rich uncle's house and grab an encyclopedia. Like,
look it up.
Yeah. And none of this information was out there back then. Oh. And... you know, I think there was like, all right, well, let's look at, you know, like the history of bread. So up until the 1920s, like you have 90% of households are making bread daily,
right?
Not only in America, but around the world.
Right.
And they're using wild yeast starter culture and they're doing the assorted bread. And, you know, it's a pain in the fucking ass. It's not, you know, it takes,
right.
takes time.
Convenience becomes a blessing and a curse.
Now... this bread, right, comes out Wonder Bread.
Right.
And it's fucking sliced.
It's packaged.
It's sheet, and you go to the store and you buy it. And you don't have to fucking make fucking bread every day.
God.
And to like my grandmother's generation, this was like a fucking dream come true for them. They were
absolutely.
Like, this is fucking great. You know? But they had no idea that they were like kind of, because it was all about convenience. It was all about, you know, TV dinners. But we didn't really understand nutrition. We didn't understand this. We didn't understand that we were losing something. And now it's coming like full circle where it's like, all right, well, maybe this wasn't a good idea. It's nobody's fault. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but.
Buying like, you know, what the fuck did my mother know, you know, buying whatever, fucking 10 2-liter bottles of fucking Coke every week and soda. And they didn't know any better. They were just like, oh, they're getting fucking calories. This is great. They're not fucking starving to death.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Because we went from a time where a lot of people were starving to death.
No, I think you're looking at pizza today. It's a great, yeah, I mean, look, we're next door, right? We're at Good Pie. We eat Vinny's. Chicken parm.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Bro.
I am so proud. Vinny's a really good friend of mine. I am so fucking proud of that kid. That's a fucking...
Oh, he's on a different level.
Yeah.
He's. I follow him. That's the best thing he's ever created.
Stuffed. By far.
Stuffed. Yeah. In that square with the freaka, and I'm like...
Yeah. So he's taking, for those who are just listening...
And moist chicken. It's not like a dry patch of chicken.
No.
No, this is a moist, juicy...
Yeah.
This is a parm.
Yeah,
this is chicken
snaps.
Parm inside of a pizza.
Yeah.
No.
So what he's doing is, for those guys that are just listening, Vinny invented... he's got two. He's got a chicken bacon ranch and a chicken parm.
Oh,
and what he does is he takes... this amazing, you know, all with like Caputo natural flours, Detroit dough that all of his Detroits are par baked. So he just slices it in half, sticks the one half in, sticks fresh breaded, you know, chicken cutlet fried in there, dumps some sauce on, dumps some cheese on, puts the top on, dumps a bunch of just cheese, cooks it till the cheese is like caramelized, fucking like almost
so
brown,
good.
Gold, black. And then he has like a sauce heater with like some cooked marinara sauce. And he puts that over the top, Parmesan Reggiano, basil. You fucking bite into this thing. It's fucking crack. I really, really hope and pray that he's competing in Pan Division tomorrow.
Oh.
And I'm like, Vinny,
he does
if
that.
You don't fucking do this, like, because he's talking about doing some grandma with hot honey.
No.
And I'm like, bro, I'm going to tell you one thing. And I swear to fucking God, if you do that grandma, you 100% won't win. If you do that chicken parm, I'm not going to say 100% because these things, it does take a little bit of luck because of the way the judging is. Well, do you know about, well, I want to fucking say this because I haven't said this publicly yet, but okay. I'm gonna start fucking kicking people's asses. I'm gonna get really involved for AC and for next year in Vegas to make this happen. So one of the biggest problems with the competitions, and I got a perfect way to solve this problem, is that you got different people out there, right? So you take one guy, right?
With different skill sets and knowledge.
Well, no. Yeah. I'm talking about the judging.
Okay.
You take one guy. So you can't have the same judges for 150 people. So right. The judges get switched out. So what will happen is you have a guy like John Arena, right? John Arena is a really fucking nice guy. All right. So the worst pizza, and it's fucking trash that comes across John Arena's desk, he'll never give it more than less than a 7.
Right.
And when he has the life-changing pizza, he'll give it a 9-8.
Yeah.
But then you got another type of person who the worst pizza, they're going to give a 2.
Right.
And the best pizza, they're going to give a 7.5.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with any of those two things. But if you get caught with that other thing,
right.
You know, so what I think needs to happen is, because there's no way to have the same judges for everything.
Right.
It's just impossible. So I think there should be master judges who don't actually judge the pizza, but kind of foreman or manage the judges during the switch out.
Right.
So they got a tablet, they're putting all the scores in, so they're in real time, and we're not gonna have a problem with fucking scoring. We could double or triple check those, because that's been a big fucking problem in the past too. The scores will come out, and then later we realize that guy actually didn't win, this guy fucking won, and it's a whole fucking debacle. But what the master's judge job would be is to record everything. He's got an eye tablet, whatever. He's taking pictures of every pie, and then those calculations are done on an Excel sheet instantly. And when the new judges come in, it's like, hey, this is where we're at right now.
Right.
So we're at a point where the average score for the worst pizza out there, say, was a 6.
Right.
Right. So
you have something to base it off of.
Yeah. And this is what that pizza was. And the best pizza score was a 9.2. And that's what this looks like. This is what this looks like. These were the flavor notes on these. So this is where you start. So the worst pizza you had, if it looks like a lot worse than this, maybe go down a point, but no more than that. And you know what I'm saying? When you're at the best pizza, this is the thing. If you want to,
this is what they do in the martial arts. When they have these giant tournaments, the guys are going to do something like a kata. They're going to do this set of moves.
Right.
First guy goes in, the judges know. We're going to judge this guy, what we think he is. And then everybody after that's going to be based off that high or low.
Yeah.
They're better than this guy. They're worse than this guy.
Right.
And you're right. So if they come back and tell the guys, okay, here's the parameters. So
yes.
They're here. So right now our best pizza is here. So if you get someone that's one of your best, you're in this zone. If you're worse, it's here. And here's
but
where
don't give it a 2.
Right.
Because we're at a 6.
Right.
Right.
So
you cannot give somebody a 1 or a 2.
This thing's coming out on fire, burnt. You know, this is ridiculous. Yeah, you have it. And you're right.
Yeah.
So there's a consistency. There's,
yes.
But you're those right. Guys, it has to transition.
You know, you bring in a Peter Reinhardt, a John Arena, a Scott Wiener, somebody that knows and is very familiar with these competitions and knows what's going on. And you bring in a couple of those guys.
Great idea.
And yeah. And then. You know,
today.
It's never going to be perfect, but you're going to get much, much closer to the best pizza that was on there is going to win. You know what I mean? And I don't think they're doing it this year because of COVID and, you know, everything's kind of a mess. But another thing that I like what they do, and I think they should do this for all the competitions, I believe currently they only do it for traditional and non-traditional, is so it's blind judging. You don't know who you're judging.
Right,
it's a number. This is good. Now they take the top 4 guys.
Right.
And now they go head to head with the same judges.
Right.
Because now, you know,
now
if something happened.
Nitty gritty. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, the best one's going to come out on top.
Well, you will get the best one. Years ago, probably was better to compete because you had less guys, right? In the sense, it was easier to win.
Not only less guys, but if most of the pizza was fucking utter trash that was going
so,
in.
So
right.
So you have less, but now you got some great, you got a bunch of great guys.
Bro, the competition
is tremendous.
Know, it's tremendous.
How do you fairly do it? Like you said, transition. Here's where we're at. Here's round one.
Yeah.
This is the high. This is the low.
Yeah. Let's keep it the right way. Yeah.
That's
Master
good.
Judges. You hear that, Pete LaChapelle? Stop fucking around, Momo.
He's
Love
the
you,
man.
Zio.
Pete's the man.
Love
bro.
You, Zio.
He's the man.
Pete LaChapelle's going to come on.
Is he?
We're going to get him on, yeah.
Listen, I've known Pete forever. He's a great guy. He's from Long Island. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
He told me a Nino story.
Can't wait to hear this one.
Tell me Nino's story. I don't know. Maybe I'll let him tell it. You were getting a little unruly back in your first expo. So
Oh, yeah.
I'd have a little talk with you.
Yeah. I was, always unruly. Always unruly.
He's screaming, a great guy.
Fucking screaming at guys. I used to scream at the STG guys because I thought, like, so in the STG competition, if you don't slap the dough, you automatically lose, right? Which to me back then, now I get it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm like, bye. I know how to slap now. I understand what they're doing. Somebody finally explained to me why. Because right. Usually with these fucking zips, it's like, wait, why are you doing this? Because I fucking told you. And I'm like, that's not a fucking real answer.
That's right.
But they're doing it because it's, you know, it's knocking off the flour and it's stretching it better and, you know, whatever the fuck it is. But I was really, really upset with that. And I used to fucking scream about it. I'm like, you guys are fucking full of shit. Like, this should be blind. Like, you shouldn't be able to see the guys and blah, 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 blah. I think that was the Kabuto Cup. Yeah. They do it. I think they do the Neapolitan blind now. Yeah. Which is, it's cool.
Well, I mean, Enzo was all about.
Oh, yeah.
And then Roberto, I spent a day with him in Georgia once and just learning, just hanging out with him. And he does that song.
Yeah, but you know what? He just started doing that. Like, he used to.
Really?
He changed it up.
I said, you know.
Well, because isn't it like. All the guys that I know, like Julio and Gino Sabilo and Davida and D'Amelio, they won't. They're like, you can't use your thumb.
Oh yeah,
you can only use these three fingers, and it has to be a certain way. And then you know, with Roberto, the way he teaches now, like he grabs it with his thumb, which
I'm like, whoa,
what are you doing over here? But I don't know. I have no fucking idea. Like I'm not in the mind of Roberto Cavaruccio, but it might be like that. You know, because he does a lot of classes. And it might be a thing where it's like, you know what? I'm getting the same result. And it's easier to teach these guys.
He just said, like, you, Tommaso, gentle. And I pushed the air and I said, you know, Roberto, I got customers. I can't.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
And he's like, they can wait.
No, they fucking can't.
He's great. He's great, but speaking of Michele, D'Amelio. D'Amelio.
Great guy. I love that guy.
Spent a week with me in Hawaii teaching me.
He came out, the Kabuto sent him out. So you were like bringing in containers of Kabuto?
I was bringing in pallets.
Pallets.
So the first charge, a bag of Kabuto, my first quoted price was $82.
A bag.
I tell you, you guys are nuts. I know there's not a chance. And then the regular guys started quoting me $57 a bag. And that's when I called up Fred Mortati and said, hey, Fred, I mean, it can't be that much. If people are paying like 28 in New York, it can't be 57 in Hawaii. He's like, that's when I met Chris Suplicki, the West Coast rep.
Right.
Great guy. And he said, Tommaso, call Chef's Warehouse in L.A. So I call them up, back my truck up at the pier. They drop a pallet. My wheels will go, you know, and I drag that thing to the restaurant. I'd stack it all through the restaurant.
Right.
And when the food rep guys came in, the vendors, the Cisco guys and whatnot, they'd be like, they'd see it. And they'd be like, they started seeing how much money they could be making. Well, we can give it to you for 37. I said, I'm getting it for 34. And why didn't you quote me 37 in the beginning?
Why'd you tell me $82, you fucking scumbag?
Same with the chow tomatoes. I had chow tomatoes all over my restaurant. Jesus. I bought them by the pallet because I couldn't get these guys to give me. Johnny Chez was paying $21 at the time for Stanislaw. They're charging me $42. I'm looking at the map, California to New York, California to Hawaii. Same distance, one's a boat, one's a truck. Why is it $22 more expensive? I called Stanislaw. Like, we sell our tomatoes the same price to everybody.
Right.
That's your distributor, man. And then the guy tells me, well, you know, give us 85% of your business, we'll cut you a deal. I'm like, I'll give you 85%. Something happens to you, man, and now I got to go chase food. You know, we only have two distributors on the island.
Right. Yeah. I can imagine.
You screw one, dude. The other one's like, yeah. So one of the warehouses burnt down. And if I had 85% of my business there and I went to the other guy, he'd be like, right. Yeah, you're on the back burner, buddy. So it was tough. It's tough to get supplies, tough to get prosciutto.
You're fucking literally in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
$16 a pound for prosciutto. $16 a pound.
$16. That's not bad.
For the marginal stuff. That was the reasonably priced stuff.
Right.
You want to get the gold standard stuff way up there.
Yeah.
It just was very difficult dealing with tourists from all over the world. I mean, we had girls.
What did you do about cheese?
Cheese was.
That had to be a pain because that's perishable.
Cheese was the killer. So there was a time where we could get a part skim whole milk Mott's from Costco.
Okay.
From their food court because they were making their own pizzas, right? So
right.
The cheese wasn't that bad. Wanted to get Grande, can't get Grande, couldn't get Iso sausage, couldn't get Belgioso. Well, I wound up going to I got it from Golden State Foods, and it was an Italian cheese, but it came in a block, and I would shred my own. I'm trying to remember
names. Galbani?
Wasn't Galbani.
No.
I'm drawing a blank.
Accio.
It was packaged by Golden State. And anyway.
Where's that? At Cali, right?
Cali, Golden State. Food.
I think I saw they got the real milk stand over there. They had some low moistures over there.
It was a good. It was an Italian, you know, Italian bread. It was like a Galbani or something like that, but they packaged. And I wound up just, putting it the grater on my Caputo and, you know.
Right.
And it was a good cheese because, and it was actually wasn't that bad. We paid crazy prices for cheese.
How much were you paying?
It's hard to remember now because it's been about a year and a half now per pound. I can't, just nuts, dude. Everything was nuts. My pizza cost was just crazy.
Right. Well, I heard like in Alaska and Hawaii, everything just costs more money anyway.
So here's the deal. Here's your typical Hawaii story. I had my first baby, my son. We're buying Pampers. It's $16 for a box of Pampers. Okay, this is 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
My father dies in Florida. I go down there. My son needs diapers. I go to the store, $4.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you kidding me? And then Walmart opens up. So here's the deal. Walmart opens up and they're like $7.
Right.
So all these other guys, all these years, could have been charging us $7 or $6. But they're, you know, so that's probably shipping plus a little profit, $7. But they're charging us $16.
Well, and that happens. Companies like Walmart will lose money on shit.
Yeah. So that's why I said, look, charge me $8. I'm paying $4 in Florida. Charge me $8. But 16.
Yeah.
You're ripping my guts out here. And that's so many things. I mean, trying to get Urbani truffle.
Oh, forget about it.
I'm trying to get stuff in, and it, you have an exclusive guy.
Right.
And he's got his little niche market and his prices. You know, trying to get. I was getting Nduja from Chicago, from a guy who made Nduja in Chicago, that Calabrese spreadable sauce.
Yeah, right? Sure.
This guy was so cool. He's making it himself.
Yeah.
He would get a...
It's a legal import.
Huh?
It's a legal import.
Yeah. He's making it himself in Chicago,
though.
Yeah,
they have to.
Right.
Yeah.
So he shoves it in a U.S. mailer box. And he's like, here, it costs this much plus $15.
Right.
Best guy in the world. The only guy that would do that crap.
Right.
I tried to cut deals with everybody. I thought about becoming a distributor, just to get a distribution license and be my own distributor.
Yeah.
Just buy my own stuff. And
just bring in the containers yourself. And
the food cost is there. I had an 18-inch New York pie cheese, and I was charging $18. Everybody else's large was 16 to 14 inches, and they were charging $22.
That's a lot of the country. Why are we charging so cheap?
Exactly. And I'm like, I got to just expand out. But I was just trying to, you know, win the hearts of the people. And I did, man. They tried New York pizza. They're ruined. Because pizza's like crack, right? You get the good stuff. You're done, man.
Yeah. You can't
go
back. You
go eat next door. You know, you eat Vinny's stuff. I mean, I don't know.
You can't go back to Milwaukee after that.
That's right, bro. And you know, so we learned. We just started. We learned, you know. We were selling slices, and we were the only guys on the island selling slices.
I got to find out what the my boy Drew Scolamelio, he's been hanging out with his girlfriend, Riyama, who has a big she actually used to work for Vinny.
Wow.
That's how
wow.
So Drew met her coming out. He was filming for me at the Pizza Expo. She was working for Vinny at the time. It's like this whole fucking circle of shit.
Wow.
But
find out where he is.
We were roommates. Well, they've been hanging out there on one of the islands. I got to find out. But he calls me up and he goes, Nino, there's fucking cows out here. There's fucking farmland. There's all this shit. And I'm like, bro, listen, set up some fucking hoop houses or something. Fucking, I'll send you tomatoes. Grow those fucking tomatoes. The hopper that you could can them with costs 15 grand. You just dump them in. They distribute them into the
San Marzano tomatoes.
Yeah.
The claim to fame, right? Is they're made in the Mount Vesuvius. It's got volcanic ash.
Right.
The big island of Hawaii in the south.
That's exactly what I fucking said. I was like, but I think he said there's a volcano there, and I explained this whole thing to him.
So you know what Kona coffee is? Kona coffee is grown in Kona in that volcanic ash.
Right.
So you pop some San Marzano in there.
Bro, with the technology today, you could fucking like, I mean, you could set up some type of operation that at least does local.
There's a guy on my island who just brought in water buffalo. So I'm trying to talk, I'm trying to find this guy, trying to talk this guy, you know.
Yeah, if you could get the fucking milk. Bro, I mean, it's going to cost you to set up a small facility. It's going to cost you a couple hundred grand.
Yeah.
But you could produce some fucking cheese yourself.
That guy can have a gold mine. There's so much. My island has buffalo, regular bison, has cattle all over, but we don't have like
milk.
Yeah, so they take all. We had a dairy that would take the milk and it would send it to Honolulu to process it, and they shut that down. You got like two slaughterhouses on the island that'll take your cow and cut them up, and you don't have like butchers and stuff like that, you know. Costco has butchers, right? But you don't have these guys. So it's hard to get, you know. There's a guy that does charcuterie, but it's like hobbies. Nobody's, you know, you don't have a sausage making guy.
Right.
That's the kind of tough stuff is getting.
You like, gotta fucking do it yourself. That's it.
But you gotta get people. So years ago, this guy, Bobby V, he was from Boston. His buddy was from Jersey. They opened a pizzeria and opened a deli.
Mm.
The deli just died, bro, because people did not understand the concept of a deli.
Was it any good, though?
It was good.
Okay.
It was good, but they didn't have the so now, I mean, Boar's Head is, that's your, Boar's Head and Safeway is your benchmark for stuff. I like Boar's Head, man, but it's good stuff, but that's it, man.
Yeah, that's all you got.
I grew up on stick pepperoni.
Right.
Matter of fact, I, you know, make sauce, you know, if I make sauce, you know, for my pasta, spaghetti, I'll take a stick, I'll chunk those pepperoni up in a 1 inch. I'll leave them in the sauce. The pepperoni leaches the oil, and the sauce gets flavored like pepperoni, and the pepperoni picks up the tomato flavor. And when you eat it,
you
try that next time.
Yeah, I got to try that
for sure.
You'll
be hooked on that.
Yeah, my boy... Andrew Bellucci, who's the guy, you know him?
I haven't been to his place. I've heard him.
How
long has he been making pizza now? Is he?
Oh, bro, this guy's.
So that's Bellucci's, right?
Yeah, he's got Bellucci's now, but he opened.
He
was the guy who opened Lombardi's after Lombardi's was closed for 30 years.
Okay.
Bro, this guy worked for Joe's. This guy was a pizza nerd in the 80s before there was any such thing as fucking pizza nerds, bro. And he has the secret history of New York pizza, like, in his head. Like, I had some fucking, we're going to have him on, we were supposed to have him on like a couple weeks ago, but shit got fucked up. We're going to have him on the podcast. We're probably going to do like 4 or 5 hours because this guy knows shit that fucking no one knows about and just blew my fucking head apart. But he just bought, he got it, it's like a $60,000 German slicer. He got it from a like slaughterhouse that went out of business. He picked it up for like 11 grand. This day, because he was sitting, he had a guy sitting downstairs all day because he doesn't like, you know, the Hormel, the pre-cuts.
Right.
He wants it a different size.
Right.
So he just had him down there all day with the Leone mozzarella slicing all fucking day, 14 hours a day slicing. You know, guys would just walk out on their shifts because they're like, this is fucking crazy. I've been slicing fucking pepperonis and cheese for fucking 8 hours. So he got this thing. You literally put the pepperoni or the cheese on and it fucking throws it on onto this weird rack thing and stacks them perfectly. And automatically, you just like put it on there and it's just like, mah, 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 mah. It's
whatever
fucking crazy.
The measurement is done, cut.
Yeah, and it stacks them for you. So it goes out onto a belt and then puts them down however you want.
Well,
it can make circles, it can make squares. You can tell it to make like six different stacks in different places and it'll just do it. It's fucking wild. It's like one of the wildest things I've ever seen.
That's where we're at, man.
Yeah.
And that saves money.
Oh, it saves tons of money. Tons
it's huge. You become, you're in control of your own product.
I mean, even if he had to pay 60 grand, he was paying 60 grand a year to have a guy slice it.
The second year, you're making money.
You're making a lot of money. And you finance something like that, and now you're paying it off in 5 years, so you don't have to take the 60 capital.
Well, that's another thing where we're at today is technology-wise and stuff, and just, you know, what you're doing with the ovens and the mixers and the ballers and that water thing.
Oh, yeah, the water meter. That thing's sick.
The water thing. God.
I fucking love that thing.
What you do, yeah, people, you need to do a podcast on your product, bro.
Yeah, I know.
Because that... I mean, just the stuff you show me today, and I'm just in my mind thinking, well, I would save money on this. And labor money, too, because
labor money.
You know, labor money
and
is...
And it's in perpetuity.
Yeah.
Like, labor you make money, it all back in, like, 6 months to a year.
Right.
And then it's just like you just put it out in your pocket for the rest of your career.
And labor money is the worst money. That's your biggest killer there. You got everything attached to it.
It's got to be products that aren't going to change the integrity of the thing. You know what I'm saying? So, if somebody... if I got a dough press, somebody wants it, I'll fucking sell it to them, but I'm going to let them know straight up, like, bro, you can do this, but your product's going to go down 50% because this is running heat on it, it's doing all these different things.
Right.
If the guy says, I don't care, fuck it. But, like, that's where we're at. Right. I just saw Univex, I think, just came out with, I want to go try it, I want to go see if I can find it at the show. They came out with a cold one. Just came out.
Really?
Where it's it looks like felt and it doesn't have heat on it and it like spins it in a weird way and supposedly it's like hand stretched. Like, I don't know. I gotta go see.
Yeah, well, we may be getting to the AI pizza maker soon.
Oh, that's coming. But I don't think like the chef or the pizza guy is ever gonna go away. It's just gonna be on a different level.
You can't take the human element out of it.
It's just gonna, listen, there's gonna be AI pizzerias, there's gonna be robotic restaurants, and then there's gonna be like the guy like James Trees or the guy like Vinny Rotolo who's doing something amazing. People are gonna pay a premium for it.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because there's a passion, and this is really why, you know, I started moving out of my business there because it started getting big and it got to be more about, okay, we got to get more money out of this, you know, rightfully so. I understand it wasn't a thing, but I would rather be smaller and have the passion. If I could do something like Vince Rotolo just did, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The pizza you made last night. I don't want to brag on you, but the pizza you made last night and have something like, see, that's quality. That's passion. That's heart. You know, I'd rather have something small. And for me, this is just a personal thing.
Right.
Know? There's people who are at the expo aspire to make a lot of money. You can franchise this thing. You can package it. You can put it out and have a moderate grade pizza and make money. And that's, if that's, you're okay with that, fine. You know, in Hawaii, I was learning my wife's culture, this Hawaiian culture, this Polynesian culture for 25 years. Mm. And then I thought, there's a handful of Italians. There's like six guys from Italy who live there. And then there's a handful of, you know, Italian Americans. And I wanted to impart a piece of culture, you know, and I'm not saying it has to be 1970 pizza, but the crust, the sauce, the heart, when they eat it, they're like, wow. now this is, that's what I'm into. I'm into watching people light up.
Right.
Wow, this is great stuff. And I mean, that's the experience I had when I had your slice, even when I was in Williamsburg at your place, Vinny's place, John Arena, Johnny Chez, these guys.
Yeah, yeah,
well, who's the guy at the industry?
Massimo. Yeah, Massimo and Nick.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you taste these guys and you're like, wow, that is my side. You know, that's what I want to do. But there are things today that, boy, you can really, I just look at stuff, just what you showed me today and think, my mind is like, wow, you could save in labor. You can save in all this, and it makes it much more lucrative to do, you know. But there has to be that human element somewhere. Hopefully there's the human heart there with the guys.
Yeah, but you could get rid of a lot of, like, mundane tasks and still be able to, like,
right,
serve the quality product. I think there's, like, three schools of thought right now. I mean, I think there's three ways to do this business.
Yeah.
I think one of the ways is, like, go big, have a bar that people actually want to drink at, because you don't have to make the whiskey, you don't have to make the beer, you just pop it off, you just made money. But you have to build it where it's, like, a place that people want to drink at. It's not, don't build a bar that people are going to have a glass of wine in with their dinner and go.
Yeah.
You want a little nightlife involved, because that's going to make up a lot of money. And then you have a big place that's fun. It's got great music. And, you know, if it's big enough, you can even carve out like a little slice sandwich shop out of it with a separate door and whatever. Because what that does is it puts enough money on the table where you can make that $80,000 to $120,000 a year higher. Especially if you want to expand and this and that human element is built into it. And that guy's going to keep track of your numbers, your company culture, your training and this and that. And he's at a pay rate that, you know, if he fucks up or he's not built for the job, there's going to be 50 guys lined up behind him. So that's kind of like, you know, kind of what Applebee's and TGI Fridays and
that entire vertical,
that's how they build their businesses, so they can have district managers and this and that. And going into that vertical and just, you know what I'm saying, kind of like making it cooler and making it like, because nobody wants to take a picture of fucking Olive Garden and TGI Friday and throw it on Instagram. So there's a big hole in like that vertical that I think people can exploit. I think the other thing you could do is, you know, by adding artisanal bread and maybe adding like some type of breakfast program with that and this and that, and vertically integrating like your equipment that it, you know, it could do pizza and it could switch back and forth and blah, 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 blah. I think you could do well with that. And for what you're saying, and I've talked to a number of guys and I've actually got them to switch to this method where it's like, do you make pizza? Yeah, I make pizza. Do you love making pizza? I love making pizza. You make good pizza. They make good pizza. Okay, this is what you're gonna do. You're not fucking opening from 11 to 11 7 days a week anymore.
Right.
You know what you're gonna do? You're gonna open a little fucking shop. You're gonna open 4 or 5 days a week. You're gonna open for 4 to 5 hours a day.
Exclusive.
That's fucking it. And now you're gonna have a life. You're not gonna have any fucking labor cost. You're gonna get to do what you love, and you'll make more money than you've ever made in your life trying to fucking hustle around doing it the other
way. Like,
period.
It's like Mark at Lucali's. I mean, Lucali's is simple. He's simple. He's got like 5 things on the toppings. He's got, you know.
Yeah, he could do it all of himself if he wants.
If he wanted to, he's got a couple guys.
He used to do it for many years.
I mean, yeah, he's off the charts now. Yeah. You can't even get in.
He's still at his plate. He still hangs out. Bro, you can't fucking drag Mark out of that neighborhood. I try to get Mark to I'm like, bro, I got to fucking kidnap the fucking guy, throw him in a trunk to get him out of Carroll Gardens.
But the guy made a quality pie. He's doing a good thing. And it just, it's like you said, man, you can't
good get. Good atmosphere. It's just, it is what it is.
What
it's
you a few said hours is resonates with me. It's like, you know, I'm 60. I've been killing myself. That my last 3 years, I had 2 cancer surgeries. I had 2 kidney stone surgeries. I had 2 shoulder surgeries. It's like, I'm, you know, you're killing yourself. It's like, I can't. I want to make pizza because I love pizza and I love turning people on to pizza. But what you just described is more something that I would lean towards. Yeah. More exclusive.
Yeah.
Hey, this guy's cool. He's good at what he does.
You're open from, I don't know what the market is there, because different markets. So if you're in New York, you're probably talking like
6 to 11 or 6 to 10 in New York. But maybe if you're in like a slowed down, slower paced day, maybe you start at 4 and you close at 9 or 10. You know what I mean? It just depends on what's going on.
Anthony used to in San Francisco. He made X amount of pizzas a day. That was it.
He only opened 4 or 5 days a week.
Yeah, and he only was 60 or whatever it was. That was it.
Yeah,
that was it. And he's like, I do this, I shut, I'm done.
That's it.
This is and guess what? It's almost like, you know, being aloof, and the more you are, more people want.
Oh yeah, you know, people fucking love it. Well, my boy Mike Vittorio was very successful with that. I talked to Scotty, you know, Scotty from Portland.
Yeah.
I talked to him 3 years ago about this, about exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because he was, you know, labor, and right. I fucking have no life. And
right.
I'm like, Scott, do what my boy Mike Vittorio did, and I described what I just described to you to him. And he's like, bro, I can't. I'm too afraid. What if it doesn't work?
Right.
Blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Coronavirus hits. He's like, fuck it. Why not? Bro, he gave me a call. Nino, I'll never fucking go back. Right. I got the best life I've ever had in my life. I got time with my family. I get to do what I love, and I'm making more money. I right. can't even tell you how right. much more money I'm making, and I'm fucking
happy.
That's
the deal.
That's it.
What's Nicole at Last Dragon? Was she open 3 days a week to start, or she still?
Well, hers is like, it's not a store what she was doing. She was just selling out of her house. Yeah, she... She's fucking awesome.
That is great.
Yeah, and she like, I mean, it's like completely illegal what she was doing. I don't think she does it like that anymore. Yeah. I think maybe once in a while.
Right.
But it didn't matter because like she had like cops and lawyers and judges coming. So like everybody was like, nobody was fucking with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, keep it simple. You know, I live on an island where, I mean, you got Silicon Valley guys coming. Mark Zuckerberg's got like 300 acres there. I got all these Facebook execs moving in. I got all this big.
Well, here's the thing. Listen, the to do that, you know what I mean? You don't really, I mean, you could do it. You could do it nice if you want, but it's the only, like, what's the word? It's the only, you know, like setup that you can have.
Right.
Where you can actually not spend a lot of money
right.
because you're doing it yourself.
That's right.
And you can get away with it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's not
like
about,
because
yeah.
if you're setting up something like that and you don't have the auto dishwashers, if you don't have the fucking right bar
right.
and the right atmosphere, it's never gonna fucking work. Look at Pizza Padilla
yeah.
in Philly. Bro, it's fucking bones. But it was him a couple hours yeah. a day doing his fucking like, thing.
Crazy.
Him and his boy. Fucking, that's it.
That's
and he
right.
was fucking making money. And then when you make money, you know, you want to expand, you and want the nice dome mix and this and that. But if you try to open 11 to 11, bare bones, like, let me buy a couple of used bacon prides and fucking use this and not do any deco and not drop 400K, you're fucking out of business,
right.
you're burnt out, and you're going to fucking die.
No, I like it.
Yeah, that's the way.
I love pizza. I love the whole, I love where it's going, man. I like where we're at, you know. I like seeing, you know, the different toppings and the creativity. You know, even in Hawaii, they did a ahi poke pizza.
Ooh, yeah.
We used some sesame oil. We baked it, crust sesame oil. We put this thing called loamy salmon. So it's a local thing. Covered it with diced avocados and ahi.
Nice.
And futakaki, whatever, and it.
Yeah, we did like a couple like Hawaiian pizzas years ago. Vinny brought me over to his boy's house. I forget the guy's name, but he's a big chef out here. And they had the little pizza oven in the
right,
back.
Right, right, right.
And I was like, bro, give me the fucking spam, whatever you want me to put on this. Right. I'm like throwing all that shit on there.
Oh, that's Hawaiian, yeah. Let's
yeah.
be clear, it's not pineapples and ham.
It's pineapples and spam.
Spam. They don't even, you know, some woman came in one day and she was going off because I took the pine, you know, as soon as I took over a guy's pizzeria, he was terrible. So we took it over, put it in ovens, you know, dressed it up a little bit, changed the dough, everything, you know. And first thing I did, you know, being old school, I said, well, we ain't doing no pineapples on this pizza, man. That's all.
Yeah, me personally, I don't.
Okay, so So 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I got almost a riot at my place.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because they come to Hawaii thinking this is a Hawaiian pizza.
Oh, the tourists, right. Well, what they don't know is Hawaiian pizza was invented in Toronto.
Exactly. So I got this woman yelling at me one day. And she's like, I want my Hawaiian pizza. I come every year. I want my Hawaiian pizza. And I said, lady, I've been here 30 years. I've never been invited to a Hawaiian's house for ham and pineapples. That's not what they eat.
Yeah.
I don't care. It was definitely, I put it back on. It was one of my number one sellers.
Yeah. I mean, if it's your number one seller.
Dude, I can't even put my hands in the pot. I got to dip it in holy water after.
Well, it makes sense. You're in Hawaii. I get exactly what that is. I really have an issue with is these guys that, you know, they got their buffalo chicken pizza. They got their barbecue chicken pizza. Right. And it's a fucking sad, dry, disgusting pizza. And I'm like, bro, if you want to go somewhere in this, you got to get rid of this shit.
Right.
You got to either do it right, like what Vinny's doing. Okay, he's doing buffalo chicken ranch, which anybody that knows me knows I fucking scream on the top of my lungs.
For ranch,
but guess fucking what? It's fucking great the way he's doing it. Will I ever do it? Probably not. But that doesn't fucking matter. That doesn't make it not great. So if you're going to do something, fucking do it right. I don't care if you do barbecue chicken, but if you're going to fucking Restaurant Depot and buying some plastic fucking jug of barbecue sauce and putting on some fucking 3-day-old fucking chicken, and then show me your fucking POS.
Right.
You're saying the people want this? Yeah. Then why are you making half pies in the middle? Why aren't you selling fucking 30 of these things? You sell these things? Show me. Right. And they're like, oh. And then sometimes they'll pull it up. And I'm like, look at your fucking numbers. Stop with this bullshit because no one's ever going to take you seriously. You're never going to get a fucking critic in here.
Dude,
you're never going to get written up because you got fucking garbage fucking food over here.
You try a pie, it either sells or it doesn't.
Yeah. If it sells,
it's
fucking
either
great.
Sells or it does.
Great.
We made a great pie. This lady was doing like jams, and she did a Hawaiian mountain apple chili pepper jam. So it had a little sweetness, but it was a spice. And we put it on pizza. It was fantastic, but I couldn't get people to order it. As much as I liked it, as much as I thought it was a good pizza, I had to just like take it off. Not selling, man. And that's the end of the day. You're either selling or you're not selling. And
have you not selling it? Get rid of it.
It could be my favorite, but it's got to be the customer's favorite.
No, 100%. Yeah. All right. On that note, we got to get to fucking Pizza Expo for this fucking big party tonight. So, thank you so much for coming on, brother.
Nino.
Love you. Always love seeing you.
Always a pleasure.
We're going to get drunk tonight. We love all you guys. Stay tuned for a couple messages from our sponsors, and we'll fucking see you later.
Thanks, Aloha.
Buddy. Aloha. Let's go.
Awesome.